part of the overall gaming project, and as Sea Alaska is repaid, you know, we'll recover our investment.
Sea Alaska Corporation works out a hotel and casino deal in California. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, October 14th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, problems with permanent fund garnishments.
You know, I just think how many people went out and bought a new used car, you know, saying we, goody goody.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Alaska Business Monthly Magazine, publishing statewide news for over 26 years from Alaska's business sector, government, and industries. Information and subscription online at akbizmag.com. And by Northern Air Cargo. For over 54 years, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come.
Sea Alaska has lost some of its California casino land to foreclosure, but the regional native corporation says it won't hinder the project. Sea Alaska has been working for several years to build a $100 million plus hotel and casino project about 85 miles north of San Francisco. Its partner is the Cloverdale Rancheria, a Pomo Indian group. It lost 2 acres to foreclosure this week. The corporation's Rick Harris says it's a small part of a 65-acre project. A recent study showed it was not needed.
What we chose to do was try to negotiate a better price because the property wasn't going to be used for casino property. The individual that owned it was not interested in any further discussion, so we felt that it was not necessary for the project, and so we chose to let it go, and it just goes through the normal structured foreclosure process.
Sea Alaska bought the 2 acres for $1.3 million, according to the Santa Rosa Press Democrat. The newspaper reports the corporation owed just under $1 million when it defaulted on the land, and it reverted to the previous owner. The Press Democrat, about 30 miles south of Cloverdale, has covered the casino extensively. Some residents strongly oppose the project, saying it would create too much traffic and change the town's character. Harris says any money lost in the foreclosure would ultimately be recovered.
We did invest some initial purchase price on the property, but it's included as part of the overall gaming project, and as Sea Alaska is repaid, you know, we'll recover our investment.
Sea Alaska's 2010 financial report issued earlier this year shows gaming operations losing more than $7 million during the previous 2 years. The same report also said the corporation moved to end some agreements with its tribal partners in Cloverdale, but Harris says the project continues.
We have agreements with the tribe to go forward with how to secure the financing for the project, and based upon that financing, that will help chart the course for the future.
The corporation earlier invested about $15 million in a San Diego area casino run by the San Pascual Indian Band. It made a sizable profit from that investment. The debate over state retirement plan options continued in Fairbanks yesterday. Legislators will consider a bill next session that would allow public employees, like teachers and firefighters, to choose between the current 401k-type retirement account and a traditional pension. The Senate State Affairs Committee held a hearing on the bill in Fairbanks yesterday. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
At issue are defined benefits and defined contribution plans. The former puts money into a system that guarantees a pension and health care for career government employees. It was the standard until 2006 when the legislature opted for a defined contribution plan, basically setting up individual investment accounts that employers and workers pay into. The value varies with the market, but it's portable, favoring younger and short-term employees. Jesse Keel, staff for Senator Dennis Egan of Juneau, prime sponsor of the pension option legislation, testified it would provide a more secure retirement option.
The defined benefit system guarantees a check in retirement, but it takes a long time to earn that check. It takes longer still to earn a health care benefit in retirement. And the amount of that is fixed by a formula. You can't pump it up, you can't bump it up.
The state did away with the defined benefits out of concern for a growing pension liability, currently estimated at $11 billion. Egan's bill would open up a defined benefit option for new employees and those boxed out of a pension by the 2006 change. Keel said the bill has provisions, including more restrictive health care coverage, designed to keep it from costing the state too much.
Senator Egan is committed to making this a workable bill and committed to making Senate Bill 121 a good deal for the state of Alaska and for Alaska's public servants.
Several local public employees, including a teacher, firefighter, and road worker who would have the option of switching to the new plan, testified in support of the bill. Aaron Danielson, a Fairbanks Airport police and fire officer and vice president of the Alaska Public Employees Association, testified that the current defined contribution plan isn't working.
Yeah, I looked yesterday in preparing for this at my rate of return. Mine's negative 4.32%. It goes up and down in the market, but there is literally less money in there today than the state and I have put in there combined over my term of employment.
Jensen and others said the situation forces workers to the federal government or other states with defined benefits plans. Jensen was challenged by Senator Kathy Geisel of Anchorage, who asked about financial risk in comparing the two retirement options.
Right now, in a defined contribution, you're talking about the fact that you're losing retirement money as the stock market goes up and down. You're living in a risk situation, and you have the option to manage that or allow the state to do it. In a defined benefit plan, who bears that risk?
Senator Geisel also wanted to know why public employees feel entitled to a secure retirement while some private sector workers have no guarantee. Fairbanks Borough Chief Financial Officer Micah Lamb testified that the effect of benefits on salaries is a hidden issue in the debate.
Generally, the DB salaries are lower than DC salaries. And when you talk about in the totality of the cost, when you add in the fact you have to raise salaries to cover, that adds to the fiscal note component.
Lamb said the unrecognized salary costs would likely exceed any plan cost increases. Estimates show it would cost the state over $120,000 to bring in current employees who opt to switch to a DB plan. But after that, normal yearly costs to government would increase minimally from $20,000 in 2015 to $66,000 in 2019 and continue to go up. State actuarial consultant David Schlesinski said the cost increase is driven by health care, not pension. Schlesinski said they estimate 80% of new employees will opt for defined benefits, while 60% of those currently under the defined contribution plan will switch to the DB option. State Deputy Commissioner of Administration Mike Barnhill said Governor Parnell is opposed to the bill due to concern about the escalating cost of defined benefits. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
About 5,500 permanent fund dividends are being recalled. The PFDs were sent out in error. 3,600 were deposited directly into bank accounts and 1,900 were sent out as paper checks. PFD Division Director Deborah Bitney says employees didn't match correct records in a new software program and dividends were paid to applicants instead of creditors. The software is called eCarnes and it's being used for the first time this year.
This affects only debts that are basically court ordered, like restitution, judgments for debts that are unpaid, things like that.
The division has requested that direct deposits be reversed and also has issued stop payment orders on the checks. Bitney says the error was discovered late Monday afternoon. While the total amount of the error isn't available, it's expected to be nearly $7 million. Bitney says it's important to get the word out about the error.
You know, 99% of the dividends that went out are just fine, that this affects a very small subset of the population, and that we really are trying to help those people, and we would like them to contact us as quickly as possible once they find out that they're involved in this.
Anchorage resident David McFadden was one of the Alaskans surprised by an unexpected withdrawal from his checking account. McFadden says he looked at his account online and instead of seeing more than $800 in the black, he was more than $200 in the red. He called his bank and all they could tell him was it was a recovery by the Permanent Fund Division, but they didn't know why. McFadden says his online Permanent Fund account never reflected that he was going to have a deduction from his check.
As of 12:40 today, the 14th, it still said that. Still said that I'm good to go.
He talked to the Permanent Fund office and found out he should have received a notice before the checks were sent out that his would have deductions. That didn't happen. He says the error was discovered by the Permanent Fund people on the 11th.
5 days after they issued the dividend, direct deposited them, and I didn't receive any notice of what they had done until last night via email. This is after the fact that I discovered it. You know, I just think how many people went out and bought a new used car, you know, saying, we, goody, goody.
McFadden's bank reversed overdraft charges, and he's filed a complaint with the state ombudsman's office. Deborah Bitney says safeguards have been programmed into eCarns to prevent similar errors. Nearly every Alaskan received $1,174 in this year's PFD. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, fish and game officials warn hunters to be safe after reports of shots being fired toward the Juneau airport.
They could just take, you know, a couple things and it could really reflect negatively on everybody.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com.
Whether visiting Barrow or attending business in Juneau, APRN goes with listeners wherever they roam. Your company's message can span across Alaska on 26 stations. Find out how by calling 907-550-8437.
The NOAA team of veterinarians looking into the death of two killer whales near Dillingham have finished their initial investigation. The team performed two necropsies, or animal autopsies, on the dead whales this week. KDLG's Dasha Eaton has the story from Dillingham.
Dr. Judy St. Ledger, who works at SeaWorld, led the team of four vets and two assistants. The NOAA team performed two necropsies, or animal autopsies, on the dead whales this week. The first necropsy revealed one of the killer whales was carrying a full-term fetus and may have died from complications. The team spent most of Wednesday doing a second necropsy on the second whale up the Nooshigak River near Black Point. St. Ledger.
The team went out to Black Point. We were able to access the carcass, although there was a bear in the area. We never had any animal interaction or problems with that animal. There was some predation on the carcass, but we were able to do a rather complete examination.
St. Ledger says her investigation revealed the second whale was also a female.
This was another adult female killer whale. The animal appears to be older than the animal that we examined in Dillingham. However, certainly we know from the history before these animals died that they were traveling together. On gross exam, we didn't find anything remarkable that suggested the cause of death or cause of illness in this animal. We were able to collect a full suite of tissues. Now, when we looked at the tissues of the animal, we really weren't able to determine what the cause of death was. But as with the first case, we're going to submit those samples to a variety of investigations over the next few weeks to see what we can learn about what's happened to this whale.
The NOAA team arrived Monday after three killer whales were seen swimming far up the Nooshigak River. The whales were first spotted up the Nooshigak near Ekwok back in September. NOAA's National Marine Fisheries Service caught wind of the situation in early October. Photos revealed the orcas were likely suffering from freshwater stress. NOAA began coordinating aerial surveys to pinpoint the whale's exact location, with the intention of putting together a possible intervention. Saturday, two of the three whales turned up dead. The third whale, a juvenile, was last seen swimming down the Nooshigak River toward Bristol Bay and has not been seen since. The team left Dillingham Thursday and will continue their investigation into what killed the whales in the lab using samples they took in the field.
As our investigation continues, not only are we going to look for what was the cause of death for each of the individual whales, but what are the things that we're finding in common with these two whales? And the kind of questions we're trying to answer are the kind of questions everyone would like us to answer. What happened? How did it happen? And what can we say potentially about why? I don't know how much we'll be able to answer those questions, but that's what we're working on now.
The results of the necropsies should be available in 4 to 6 weeks. In Dillingham, I'm Daisha Eaton.
The Alaska Department of Fish and Game is warning local waterfowl hunters near Juneau to be safe after a report of someone firing shots toward the runway at the Juneau airport. Area management biologist Ryan Scott says the hunters were allegedly not on the nearby Mendenhall Wetlands State Game Refuge.
A couple things there. One, it's obviously not very safe to be shooting that direction. Two, during the waterfowl season, waterfowl hunters can use a shotgun to hunt ducks and geese on the refuge, but you've got to be on the refuge.
Scott says the incident is under investigation. He's not aware of any pending charges at this point. The waterfowl hunting season stretches from mid-September to the end of the year. Since 2003, Scott says the department has required a permit to hunt on the Mendenhall Refuge.
The purpose of that permit was so we could have some time with the hunter, explain some of the issues and concerns out there, and then provide them the information to make sure folks make good decisions out there. I would say 99.9% of the waterfowl hunters utilizing the refuge use very good, safe hunting practices, but it could just take, you know, a couple things, and it could really reflect negatively on everybody.
Scott says about 300 people apply for permits every year, making it one of the most popular hunts in Juneau.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska, working shoulder to shoulder with Alaskan businesses for nearly a century. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. And by Condor Airlines, offering nonstop service to Frankfurt from Anchorage and Fairbanks between May and September, with connections to most German and European destinations. Details available at condor.com. Support for AK comes from the Federal Aviation Administration, setting standards for the operation of aircraft in airports. FAA.gov/go/flyalaska or toll free at 1-866-357-4704.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugia,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Aleknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Rosemarie Alexander. This week on AK, problem bears, the kind that will root around in your garbage if it's not properly stowed. Many Alaska communities know this type of bear well. They're cunning, inventive, and very hungry. Petersburg wildlife officials have had an especially busy season dealing with bears. So far, they've caught 6 and relocated them far away from town. KFSK's Matt Lichtenstein rode along as the most recent capture was released.
The little black bear cub didn't make much noise as it pawed at the door of the trap, a large section of culvert pipe with a metal grate on one end and a door on the other. Just a few huffs and some jaw snapping, occasionally a very faint whine. I accompanied biologist Rich Lowell on a trip out the road to release this animal at a relatively remote spot on the Tongass National Forest. As we drove, Lowell explained that he had just captured the young cub that morning. The animal had made a downtown foray inside the Petersburg Fisheries plant and then later got cornered behind the grocery next door.
So, ran back to the office, grabbed the bear trap, cooked up a batch of bacon and molasses and oats, and made a little cracker trail across the lot, and then we stepped back and watched the bear go into the trap.
Did he literally follow the cracker trail like E.T. following some Reese's Pieces?
Well, you know, bacon is just something that they can't resist, and, you know, relatively tame, having been around town and habituated to humans, so...
It was just a few days earlier that a bear cub, maybe this one, was seen wandering the streets, climbing fences, and running through yards between the schools and the Petersburg Medical Center. Its mother was nowhere to be seen.
You know, people often speculate that something's happened to the sow or she's been shot. And I think what's going on is it's just very easy for the sow and the cubs to get separated in an urban environment where you've got, you know, you've got people, you've got dogs, you've got vehicles, and I think they just get separated and don't find their way back together.
Between Fish and Game and local police, authorities have moved 6 bears out of town this summer and fall, 3 adults and 3 cubs. That's a record for the 10 years Lowell's been in town. Since the animals are attracted by garbage, he says the problem is largely avoidable.
If you can secure your garbage can so that it's not accessible to bears, put it in the garage if you have it, put it out the morning of pickup, then it's not available to bears and they move on.
We stopped on a logging road by a salmon stream at the south end of the island. Lowell says his method for releasing a bear mainly depends on the bear itself. Grown bears require more caution, of course. You can't just pop open the door and wave goodbye. Even these little guys have sharp teeth and claws that can do damage if you're not careful. Lowell climbs on top of the culvert before he actually opens the door.
And then I have that lever up top where I can just kick this open, and he's gonna bolt right out of here, and I'd be surprised if he didn't go up one of these 2 trees when we let him out of here. Okay, are you ready?
Yep.
As I watched from the gate of the pickup, Lowell opened the trap door from above. The cub seemed reluctant to leave at first. It sniffed the air, looked outside, and looked back at the remaining bacon and molasses inside.
I can't see him. Is he thinking about
it? He's thinking about it, yeah. He likes the food, though, I think. He's just kind of standing there sniffing around. Wow, he's really little. Now he's moving a little bit. He's starting to sniff the sniff outside. There he goes.
It took all of about a minute, and the cub cautiously hopped out, like Lowell predicted, and scurried over to the closest tree and put its paws up on the trunk, but it didn't climb. After a brief glance around, it quickly disappeared into the brush. Lowell said its chances of survival were slim.
You know, they won't have the added warmth of the sow in the den, you know, once they go into hibernation, and whether this thing will even know to go into hibernation is questionable, but again, it's a better option than simply euthanizing it on the spot. At least this way, it's got a chance. It's not a great chance, but you know, it's the best we can do for it.
The day after we released this cub, another was seen wandering around town. For AK, I'm Matt Lichtenstein in Petersburg.
And now it's time for our weekly trip around the state. This week, we're headed to McCarthy in Wrangell-St. Elias National Park. The little town booms with tourists in the summer, but it's much quieter this time of year. Then we're on to Good News Bay on the Bering Sea west of Dillingham.
Okay, my name is Bonnie Kenyon. I live in McCarthy. I'm a year-round resident, and my husband and I publish the Wrangell-St. Elias News. It's a bi-monthly newsletter. It comes out of McCarthy, which we put together in our own cabin and enjoy doing that. We have a beautiful day out here in McCarthy. Our low, however, has dropped to 8 degrees so far this fall, and we're all preparing for winterizing cabins, and people are getting their firewood in and just doing those end of season chores before the snow falls. I think it's just a beautiful time of the year. Our fall season seemed to come a little early this year, providing us with a lot of beautiful colors, and everyone out here just seemed to be in awe of our season this year. Well, I guess I might be stretching it if I say 30. others might put it lower down into the 20s, but I kind of I stretch it a little bit because people do come and go. So spread out, I guess I'm going to give it around 30 or 35 folks. McCarthy Road is much better than it has been, especially since we moved here in 1978, but it's improved greatly. But in the winter, the snow comes, it fills the potholes, it gets smooth. Well, I guess I'd say the highlight of socializing would be on our mail days, which we have 2 a week. on Monday and on Thursday. And that seems to be the gathering point is our little mail shack up on the McCarthy airstrip. And our mail pilot is Dave out of Volcana, and he's been making this run a long time for us. We appreciate it.
My name is Mary Brown, and I'm the administrator for the city of Goodnews Bay. We're in between Bethel and Dillingham, along the coast by Cape Nunham. Yeah, it's really nice. I was born and raised here for 53 years. They have commercial fishing and salmon. They do halibut fishing also. Right now there's a whole bunch of stuff going on, so there's a lot of local hire. They're building 4 new housings. This year it'll be our 11th year, I think, that we start the spring carnival, and we have it for like one whole week for the kids when they're having their school break, their spring break. That's when we have our spring carnival.
That was Bonnie Kenyon in McCarthy and Mary Brown in Good News Bay. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Matt Lichtenstein in Petersburg and APRN's Annie Feit in Anchorage. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Rosemarie Alexander.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Ed Schoenfeld, Rosemarie Alexander, and Casey Kelly in Juneau, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Dacia Eaton in Dillingham. Rosemarie Alexander was our guest host for AK this week. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, and I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. And by Solstice Advertising, bringing creativity to Alaska businesses and nonprofits, from research and strategy to print, web, and broadcast production. Solstice Advertising, an agency for brands that want to shine. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health, and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
You can find APRN headlines from around the state online at alaskapublic.org. There you'll discover local and worldwide news, upcoming events, and statewide community conversation. alaskapublic.org, connecting you to Alaska one story at a time.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.